This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Who's stronger, Gojo or Sukuna? Let's really talk about it. Hi everyone, you're listening to Thoughts and Theories on ORFM, where I'll delve deeper into the meanings and messages of films, books, TV shows, and more. I'm Asha Amma Asri, and let's get into it. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Thoughts and Theories. How is everyone going? I hope you guys are having a fantastic day. I am, personally, for once. uni's been kind of tough lately, but things have been, I think after this week, hopefully, things will start to slow down. I was involved in a lunchtime theatre a few weeks ago, and that was quite stressful for me. First time being in a lunchtime theatre, which was really cool. I would definitely want to be in another one again in the future if the opportunity presents itself. But I hope you guys are doing well. I know exams are coming up. The end of the school year is approaching, so that means people who are doing NCEA will have to start counting their credits and making sure things are all up and making sense on that front. But otherwise, I hope you guys are doing great. Other than that, and, you know, take a wee break. Listen to me yap about Jujutsu Kaisen. That's right, guys. We're talking about Jujutsu Kaisen. It's an old topic, that's for sure. If you don't know what Jujutsu Kaisen is, then you're living under a rock, actually. Okay, I'm kidding. But for those of you who don't know, Jujutsu Kaisen is an anime that I think really popped off in... Ooh, hard to say, 2023, I think, 2023, 2022, something like that. And in celebration of season 3 coming out, I thought it would be really cool to talk about JJK and how it is so far and sort of like analyze the characters and the plot and things like that. I will be talking about the anime specifically and not the manga. Maybe I will make references to the manga. I haven't quite read it, but the ending has been spoiled to me, and I will try my best not to refer to it, even though that is such a strong point that sticks out to a lot of people when they discuss JJK, right? Because I don't want to spoil it for anyone who isn't in the know and would like to enjoy the anime as it comes. I think some people would prefer being spoiled, or like, I think it's better said, I think some people would actually be more likely to spoil it to other people than be spoiled themselves, let's be real. I don't think there is a single JJK fan who doesn't know how this series ends, which, you know what, is okay. But I'm here to try and make new fans, right? So if you haven't seen JJK, it's an anime that is... it's a high school anime, so I think that makes it a shoujo. But it follows our main character, Itadori Yuji, who is like a normal student. He's super strong, but other than that, there's nothing really unusual about him. His grandfather passes away, and then he accidentally comes across a cursed object, which is like a severed finger. And he accidentally eats it. Yeah, I don't know how you accidentally eat a finger, but that's what happens to him. Okay, well, accidentally isn't actually the right word. He intentionally eats it. But the way he came about to that situation was an accident. He was trying to help out a guy that he just met who was also around his same age. And then he got introduced to a world of curses and jujutsu. And in this world, in the setting of JJK, there are people who are normal people like us, living our day-to-day, going to work, going to school, chilling. And then there are curse users, and sorcerers. So Yuji, he gets roped into a school for sorcerers because he became the vessel of a really, really powerful curse. And a curse is like a manifestation of like negative emotions, I think. So it's usually very strong around schools and, you know, stuff like that. And the whole purpose of sorcerers and the school of sorcerers is to basically get rid of these curses and kill them. I think vanquish is the right word for it, but I'm not quite sure. So the protagonist is on his way to killing curses and getting stronger and making sure he doesn't get executed in the process, because he isn't considered a proper sorcerer because he houses a curse within him. And that curse isn't just any old curse. It was considered the king of curses. And, you know, it was the strongest of its time. And it was considered, it was so hard to beat, this curse. Sukuna is the name. Sukuna was so hard to beat that the only way to vanquish it was to seal it into objects, and that was through the objects of 20 fingers, because he had four arms. Anyway, I think that's okay, right? You guys understand where I'm going with this? I'm sorry. I'm sort of all over the place with this. But yeah, that is basically the gist of JJK. I didn't really get into it when it first came out because it just doesn't seem like my thing, because I'm very much like a straightforward, like slice of life type romance girl, I think, when it comes to anime anyway. I'm not really a fan of slice of life when reading books, but when watching anime, I think I like things to be very chill or like very straightforward in terms of, okay, actually straightforward isn't the right word, is it? No, I think the right word is to say I'm not really a fan of action. I like fantasy, you know, I like romances and I like getting to know the characters and stuff. But action has always been something that I was never really into. But recently that has changed, I suppose. I'm not really sure why. My brother was really, really, really trying to get me into JJK when it first got like really popular. I remember JJK Zero came out in, oh, I don't know when, but I remember when it came out in theaters, my brother tried to get me to watch it with him, actually. I was never really interested. But he did manage to convince my older sister to watch it, and she had no context as to what JJK was. I ended up seeing, an episode of season 2 when Gojo, this is for the fans, when Gojo, was, you know, just got sliced in half, and then Geto and Toji were, you know, meeting each other under in that, like, you know, in that basement. What arc was that called? But I don't exactly remember. But that arc specifically, I remember when that pinnacle like moment happened, and I was just like, oh crap! But I didn't get the full impact of it because I wasn't following the show, and I just knew it was like insane how things ended up going, and that was like sort of a catalyst for, you know, how everything sort of went down. But yeah, no, it was just, I couldn't really get forced into watching it. I had to fall into it myself, because I don't know, like, I think I've just changed a little bit more these days, so I appreciate it a bit more. So I think out of everyone in the anime, my favorite is definitely Itaru Yuji. He's so sweet. He's so nice. He's such a ball of sunshine, and he's so positive. Or, well, he was. Let's see how he is in season 3, yay? If you guys really are planning on watching JJK and you don't want to be spoiled, I do recommend you guys going out and watching the anime first or reading the manga first before listening to this, because I will be going into deep analysis of these characters, I can't do that without spoiling things. So from now on, I'm just going to assume anyone who's listening is a fan of the show. So as you guys know, Yuji is in a team with Nobara and Megumi, right? And I really like this trio. JJK is very similar to Naruto. And Naruto was obviously very big within its generation. I'm even doing a mini series, watching through the whole Naruto Shippuden series with my friend Case Tapine. And we have currently gone up to I forgot one. But we've already done two parts, and we're working on a third part to watching Naruto. But there's a lot of parallels with JJK and Naruto, right? Naruto also has a three-member team where the youth is trying to fight a war and trying to help other people. Same as JJK, three-person team, two guys, one girl. And actually, let's just compare the main characters real quick, right? So in Naruto, Naruto is a young orphan who was hated by the village, and he wants to become a ninja, but he can't because he is ostracized by the village because he's got a tailed beast sealed within him, which is like a huge, like, demon-like entity. And that's why people, like, hate him, and they want to kill him, essentially, right? And then there's our main, our protagonist within JJK. Yuji, he doesn't have any parents, so I guess that makes him an orphan. He was raised by his grandfather, and then his grandfather died. Oops. And then he wants to become a sorcerer. Well, he becomes a sorcerer later on, but because he doesn't know about it in the beginning. But he gets a demon sealed inside of him, and therefore everyone wants to try and kill him, and it sort of like hinders his path to becoming a sorcerer. So you can sort of see that there are like similar parallels between Yuji and Naruto. And you can sort of see that as well with the characters Megumi from JJK and Sasuke from Naruto, because they're both the emo characters and they're both like kind of done with life, I suppose, but just the stereotypical emo stock character. And then there's Nobara and Sakura, who are the girl characters, and I would argue that Nobara isn't as useless as Sakura. Like, hey, I love Sakura, she's my girl, but I can't deny how she's been written is she's actually quite not very compared to like Naruto and Sasuke. She's definitely not useful, right? There, she's not really she's a cool character base, but I don't think she was written well. I think Nobara is a lot better. And she's definitely like a product of her time, right? Whereas Sakura, she was very feminist of her time, because at the time there wouldn't have been very many female protagonist characters back in the early 2000s, late 1990s. But Nobara is, you know, a character of the 2020s, right? So, you know, there are a lot more like female centered roles and things like that, and so she's, I think, a better written character. But even then, I think there were many opportunities in which she could have been utilized a lot more. But hey, it's not her story, right? Yuji's my character. So I wanted to talk about the parallels in generation, in the two generations, Yuji's generation and Gojo's generation, right? Because it's clear that Gojo, Gito, and Iiri, they're a three-person team in the previous generation, and they both represent each other, right? We can all agree that Nobara and Iiri Shoko, they're both like the parallels of each other. They're both girls, and they're both not really the center of the argument. But this is where there's a lot of debate, right? So when it comes to Yuji and Megumi, people tend to switch it out, right? Because Yuji, some people think he's a Gojo parallel, and some people think he's a Gito parallel. And then with Megumi, vice versa, right? I'm personally of the team that Yuji is a parallel of Gito, because Gito's cursed technique is that he eats curses, and then those curses become part of his own personal, like, weapons, right? It's now a part of his arsenal, and he's tamed it. Yuji, while he doesn't eat curses, he did eat the finger of Sukuna and became a vessel for him. And he is a total opposite of like Geto, but so similar at the same time. Let me explain. So Geto was someone who was very empathetic, right? He felt things very, very strongly. And when things started going wrong for him, And I'm talking about like the whole thing with when he was fighting Toji, and then Haibara's death, and goodness, I forgot who the name of the girl who they were guarding, because she was going to be the new vessel of Tengen. But you know, when she died, that obviously like really affected him as well, and he went into a huge depression. But he felt so strongly. He felt like he was backed into a corner, and at one point he was just like, I have no choice but to change the very society that we are living in. Like, he thought that the only way to make things better for younger sorcerers was to betray the Jujutsu society and then rebuild it from the bottom top, right? And he started that off by killing his own parents, because he wanted to show that he was so affirmed with his decision. He wanted to make a decision so strong and so irreversible that if he ever wavered in his confidence, then there's no going back, you know, because he's already done the worst thing possible. So at this point, he has to just keep going forward. And it's a horrible thing that he did, but his intentions were, he wanted to make things better for the next generation of Jujutsu sorcerers and make sure they don't need to say goodbye to their loved ones, and so that they don't have to die young and, you know, have all this wasted potential and opportunity. So that was how Geto Suguru reacted to like something horrible happening. But Itadori Yuji, he is also very, very empathetic. Very empathetic character, right? That's the whole reason why he wanted to become a Jujutsu sorcerer in the first place, right? He had only met Megumi for a single day when he realized, hey, I can't just walk away from this. He could have just let Megumi die, but he didn't. He knew eating that finger could have killed him, and the chances of him not surviving was very high. But he did it anyway because he was like, anything to try and help him out, right? And then he continued to become a Jujutsu sorcerer because he took his grandfather's last words to heart. He wanted to help people. Yes, he will be another like cog in the machine, but his task was to help people. He wouldn't be able to sleep at night knowing that there were things that only he could do that no one else could, and he's just sitting back and not doing anything. He's just that sort of guy. So when Yuji goes through something very, very bad, right? Like, let's give an example with, like, Mahito, right? When he was facing with Mahito, or even Kenjaku, right? He had gone through so many horrible things throughout the manga, but he never once wavered from the path that he was supposed to take, which is being a strong Jujutsu sorcerer and helping out within his own capacity. He could have at any point broken and become the villain and people would understand, but he didn't. So that's what I really like about the parallels between Geto and Suguru, because they both sort of walked along the same path at one point, but Yuji stuck with the path of being a sorcerer, and Geto, he ended up going to a different path and becoming a curse user. And it's just so cool to see, because these are two different timelines in a way. You know what I mean? Like, they're the same characters, but the results are so different because they took different paths. It's the same how I would say is, again, I'm going to be referring to Naruto a lot. Like, I love Naruto a lot more than I like JJK. There's so many, like, similarities between it, so I will be referencing between them intermittently. But if you look at Naruto and Obito, right? Naruto, he was you know, an outcast, and he never, ever, ever gave up. He went through a lot of horrible things growing up, but he stuck with his ninja way, and he wanted to become Hokage because he learned to turn that hatred into determination, and he wanted to help people. That was how he went about it. And Obito, growing up, he was an outcast of his own clan, right? He was too cheery, and he couldn't be, wasn't as good at things as like the other prodigies within the clan and stuff like that. And he also went through horrible things, right? He saw his teammates die, and then he got trapped under a rock, and then he got reprogrammed by Madara, and it was all over the place, right? But he chose the path of vengeance. He chose to let the hatred consume him. The reason why Obito was such a good villain is because we understood him so well. And, like, I'm not excusing his actions at all, but you understand. Like, you really understand why he came to the conclusion that he did. And you sort of can't, like, you sort of can't blame him. You get it, you know? So they're two very similar characters, Obito and Naruto. But then as they're going on with their life, Naruto chose to stay on the past, and he chose to become Hokage, stay determined, stay strong, stick to his ninja way. And then Obito let the hatred consume him, and he basically caused the next ninja war. So this is what I mean when I'm talking about Yuji and Geto. They're just both so similar to each other. They are the product of two opposite timelines, essentially, right? And they affect each other, these guys. And I kind of wish we got a scene where Yuji and Geto got to meet, because they're both just, they're so similar. And I just wish that they could, because I think in a more peaceful world, Geto would have been a teacher alongside Gojo, and, you know, he would have been able to have, like, conversations with Yuji about, like, oh yeah, like, curses, about the taste of curses and, like, what it's like eating it and stuff like that. Because Geto had to swallow these disgusting curses, right? And he was able to taste every part of it. It tastes vile. Right. And that can like bring you down. The only way to get stronger is by consuming like vomit. Right. That's horrible. So to have like this, he's sort of like outcasted in a way. Like no one was able to understand him and his technique. But if Yuji was able to just like, you know, pop in, then he would have someone to sort of like talk to and maybe even mentor personally. I think that would have been really cool. But obviously shows aren't cool or interesting unless there are conflicts and stuff like that. So this will never happen. I'll just have to stick to the fanfics. But I just, like, it's just a cool headcanon of mine. Like, in another world, in an alternate universe, Geto would have been the mentor for Yuji. Anyway, next up I wanted to talk to is, oh yeah, feel free to like agree or disagree with me, like let me know, because there's probably like a huge JJK fan out there that's gonna be like, Asha, what are you on, which, fair enough, everyone is entitled to their own opinion, so let me know. But the next parallel pair that I wanted to talk about is Fushiguro Megumi and Gojo Satoru. But before that, let's have a wee song break. I'll see you guys in a wee minute. And welcome back. So, as I was saying, Gojo and Megumi. I know people are like, Asha, what are you talking about? Because a lot, the famous, or like the more commonly accepted parallel is between Gojo and Yuta, which I totally get. Yuta is absolutely so strong, and he's a special grade for a reason. But I don't know, like, Yuta aside, I don't really know him that well, because I haven't watched JJK Zero yet. I will eventually, but not quite yet. But I think maybe because Gojo and Megumi, because they're sort of like a father-son pair, right? And Gojo had like a huge hand in raising Megumi and helping him become who he is. And especially with like Gojo's relationship with Toji as well. Like, Gojo killed Megumi's father figure. Or, like, his, not father figure, Gojo killed his biological father. And Megumi doesn't know this yet, I think. And I don't know if he does later on, but as of now, he doesn't know anything. And I cannot wait to find out how that is revealed and how that's told. Because, like, imagine that, eh? Like, hey, I know I raised you all your life, but, like, by the way, I killed your dad. That's why he hasn't been raising you. Sorry. But, like, in my defense, it was self-defense. He tried to kill me first. Like, come on. Just imagine. But, I think Megumi is this generation's version of Gojo, because while Megumi isn't, like, super powerful, I don't think anyone could be at the level that Gojo is, like, ever. So Gojo doesn't exactly have an equal, other than Sukuna, but that's another thing. But when it comes to Megumi, I think he is quite strong. He's got a lot of potential. And, like, Mahoraga aside, he's got the Ten Shadows, which is a part of – which Mahoraga is a part of course. But he's got the Ten Shadows. He's also part of the Zenin clan. And there was something else that I had noted down, but I can't exactly recall it at this time. But he had all these things, and it's the making of a great, great sorcerer. But he just doesn't have much hope. And his outlook in life is just so negative that he's not really harnessing this potential that he has. So he's limited by his own self. And this could have something to do with his sister as well. But we haven't gotten up to the Calling Games yet, the anime that is. Which, speaking of the Calling Games, my favorite character within the entirety of JJK has got to be Yuji, of course. But Yuji Choso is also really cool. Like, I just think his blood technique is super cool. Like, I think that's like a Kamo bloodline thing, but like maybe because I'm just simple-headed, but I really like Choso's character design. I think he looks really cool. Like, it's the pigtails and like the blood along his nose and stuff like that. And can I just say, when Choso and Yuji first met, no one was able to clock somebody that quickly before. Like, in an anime, there's no long monologue, there's no, ah, yes, this is the guy I'm about to kick out, or, like, you know, defeat or something. No. Choso saw Yuji coming down the escalator and was like, yep, clocked it, and then immediately attacked. Like, I don't think that has ever happened within, like, anime history. Like, it's just so funny how quickly he was like, yep, let me just get my job done. I'm here for one thing and one thing only. Dude, Yuji got clapped. Like, he was out of there. Like, if it wasn't for the fact that Choso realized, oh, wait, no, Yuji's my bro, then I think Yuji wouldn't have been able to, like, leave that, or at least leave it unscathed. But yeah, with the Shibuya arc, though, there's so much that I would love to get into. Like, there's just so much things that I was like, oh my god, I wish things would have went differently. Like, it makes you sit on the edge of your seat, sort of thing. Like, I think it was treated very well, I think, especially with, like, you know, Nanami and like how that went down. And the whole thing with Yuji when he was fighting with Mahito, and you know it was warned on the radio or something, or like the broadcast, and was like, Yuji's in the pit right now and he's fighting with Mahito. He's the only one who can. Anyone who's going to help Yuji will probably die, and you know, you got to stay back. But no, Yuji's bro, Todo came out of nowhere and was like, yeah, I've got you, brother. And then they fought Mahito together, and I'm just like, bro, that is just so, so cool. Like, it's so insane, like, the loyalty that Todo had for his bro Yuji, even though they just, like, met recently. I don't know what's wrong with Todo, but his whole thing in his head about their shared brotherhood or whatever is so funny. Like, I can't understand it, but it's so cool. I wanted to go back to Gitto, actually, right? I wanted to focus on him today. I'm sort of scattered all over the place because I'm doing analyses on different little things. Like, I don't have time to go over every single character, but maybe if you guys are interested, I could do a part two. But for now, Gitto, his whole thing and his whole cult, right? Because he leaves Jujutsu Society, starts his own cult, and is trying to kill the elders of the Jujutsu world and try and bring about the new age of sorcerers, right? Because this whole thing is curses come from monkeys, right? And monkeys is a slur for people, normal people like us. So curses come from us and our negative emotions. But because of this, sorcerers have to die. And he thinks that's not fair. So if he could just kill every single human being on Earth and just leave sorcerers and curses, then things would be better, right? Because that way, no more people have to die. I think at one point he just got lost. Like, he's fully broke. He was at a phase in life where he was so easily swayed. First, Hybara died, right? Which is his junior. And then the whole thing with Toji, and then that girl dying right in front of his eyes. Things just spiraled out of control, and he got like into a full-on depression. And I really, really love how that was shown, by the way, because obviously us as the viewers, we see there is a difference between in Geto's behavior. He changes and he becomes really withdrawn and pale and quiet, and he doesn't really eat much, and he's so out of it, right? I think the Vessel thing happened first and then Hybara's death. But like, he's so pale and nobody else notices it. And some fans are like, hey, these are horrible friends. How could you not notice that Geto is slipping between your fingers? Like, look how pale he is and stuff like that. But that's the thing. In real life, it's so hard to notice these things because you see these people every single day and you're so busy with your life and your own problems that when it's actually time to look at other people, like, it's just so hard to notice. And like, I'm not saying how everyone dealt with the situation was perfect. I mean, clearly, look at how Geto turned out. But also, like, it's hard. Depression is an invisible illness. And at the time, Gojo, who had just found his whole curse technique and the whole thing with Infinity and stuff, like, he just went through a massive power up and he started being worked more by the elders of Jujutsu Society. So he wasn't even around much to begin with. Whereas before, it was Gojo and Geto. They were a duo. They're not anymore. There's a very, very strong and stark difference in strength between Gojo and Geto. From then on, Gojo was no longer one of them. He was an entity of his own. And I will talk a lot more about that in a second. I wanted to talk about Iri Shoko for a second. Shoko is a very interesting character in the fact that she's so lonely, I think. She is the only one in her generation of students that is left alive, right? And in a sense, she's dead herself, right? Like, imagine that. Everyone you've ever known in your batch, they're dead. And you're the only one left alive. And the only reason why you are is because you're the one, like, in the morgue. And you have to deal with their dead bodies and stuff. Your friends' dead bodies. Like, that is just so insane to me. And I feel like I wish I could see more interaction between like Shoko and Gojo as adults, because they do a little bit, but it's not that focused on because obviously they're not the super main characters. But dude, poor Shoko, bro. I don't know how I would have survived knowing all my friends not only died, but was killed. And it's just because this is the way of life. Like, this is their occupation. This is how things go. And she has no choice but to accept it, because it's not like she can just resign, because these things will still happen even if she isn't involved in it. But yeah, no. In the last wee bit, I wanted to talk about Gojo, because there's the whole thing, Gojo and Sukuna, because I did say, who is stronger, Gojo or Sukuna? They're both very strong. Sukuna is the king of curses. Gojo isn't the king of curses, but he is the strongest of his time. And there's obviously that final battle within the manga between Sukuna and Gojo, and the results of that I won't really get into. But it's a funny question, isn't it? Because I think they're both strong, but just in different ways. Because regardless how the fight turned out, like, people would say I'm a Gojo glazer for this, but I would say Gojo is stronger, and that is because of ideology. Sukuna is strong because he has no connections, because he's very selfish, and because he's a cannibal as well, right? Like he ate people, and he's very strong, and he denounces. Is it denounce or renounce? I'm not sure. But he basically like cuts off all connection, and he stands at the pinnacle, and he likes to be alone. Like this is his whole thing, is being alone is good because he's the strongest. Whereas Gojo, the reason why he's the strongest as well is because he chose love over hatred. So even though he never really had his own childhood, as you can see in season two, he chose to guide the next generation, right? To give them a little bit more freedom, a little bit more happiness, things that he never had as a Jujutsu kid. And so that's why you can see him spoiling Yuji and, like, you know, helping him out and, like, you know, with choosing to take in Megumi instead of, like, leaving him to be sold to the Zenin. And, like, that's why he took a chance on Yuta in JJK Zero when the elders was calling for his execution. Like Gojo saved two kids from being executed twice, right? And they ended up being probably the closest people to him, right? To everyone else, Gojo is seen as a weapon, as the strongest, as inhuman because of how strong he is. But to his students, he will always be a student. To Megumi, he's like a father figure, right? To Yuji and Nobara, that's their teacher. You know, someone he can have fun with, someone he can, someone to teach them and things like that. Like, he was humanized by the people around him. And I think that's what made him stronger, ideologically speaking, anyway, you know, because you can never truly be strong if you're alone. Like, that is probably both your greatest strength and your greatest weakness, you know, and that's the same thing for love. That is your greatest strength and your greatest weakness, because if anything happens to that love, you might go to the deep end. And you can see that with Geto, right? And you can see that with Yuta. Like, he loved Rika so much, he turned her into a curse by accident because he loved her so much. And I think that's also like the overarching thing about JJK, right? To love someone is to curse them. Like, love is the greatest curse of all. Like, I think Gojo is the one who says that. And that is proven time and time again in multiple instances within the entirety of JJK. And this is including the manga as well. Because you could say that Yuji's grandfather cursed Yuji into this lifestyle when he said, do good things and help people. Because it was that ideology that made Yuji become a sorcerer, that made him become who he was. And it was because of Geto's ability to love that caused him to become the way that he was, that caused him to kill people, right? And Yuta's love was so strong for Rika that he turned her into a curse. So it is proven multiple times within JJK that love is the greatest curse of all. I think everyone has a curse that they have to deal with in real life at some point. You just have to choose your battles, right? Everyone has to fight something. And I would choose love, always, right? I think these characters, like, are all so, so well written. There are a few things about the ending of the manga that I would love to talk about, but until the anime is fully caught up, I probably won't get into it because I'll go into, like, massive, massive detail, and I don't really want to do that now because we're still early on yet in the manga series, if we're looking at the anime anyway. I believe season three starts off from after what happened with Shibuya, and also hopefully the Culling Games will get into that. I'm not quite sure about, like, the timeline with that either, because I don't really follow the manga, but it would be really cool to see. And I've seen the trailer. The trailer looks so sick, and the editors on TikTok and Instagram are already doing amazing work with editing these characters and glazing them so, so hard. But I wanted to ask you guys, like, what are your favorite characters and why? What relationships do you think is the most interesting, or, like, you know, stuff like that. Let me know. You can find me on my Instagram, Asha Amadasri, Asha_Amadasri. Really quickly, actually, I wanted to talk about Nanami, right? Nanami is so cool, and he's also one of my favorite characters. And how do you say he shows his character, right? His rigidity and his whole salaryman thing is the whole thing that makes him interesting, right? But what's interesting about the way he's dressed is he's so professional, and then he just has a leopard print tie, which is so, so random. But I think it's trying to show that while he's trying his best to keep his life controlled and keeping things like on track and stuff like that, this is his way of showing rebellion, right? So he clocks out at a very, very like rigid time, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, or whatever time that he clocks out at, and he doesn't like working overtime because he doesn't want to, like, you know, get out of, like, he doesn't want work to take over his life, because that's what it was when he was a salaryman, right, after Haibara died and he got out of Jujutsu Society. And it's just so funny how, like, there will always be a little bit of mischievousness within him and his character. And you can see that within his tie. Like, he's secretly buried underneath all that emo exterior, a fun guy. And you can just see that little bit of severity and rebellion within his tie. And that probably makes no sense to you because I didn't really explain it that well. But it made sense to me. And if I have time next time we talk about this, I will go into more detail about his costuming and other people's costuming as well. Because I think the costume designs for all these characters are so interesting, and it tells you a lot about who they are and how that can come across to viewers. I don't know. I think ever since I became a designer and took the designing paper, I have been looking at things a lot more critically, and I'm still like such a noob and I have no idea what I'm talking about half the time, but it's just so cool, like, how you view things differently when you learn new things, I suppose. But anyway, thank you guys so much for listening. As usual, please, please take care of yourself, and keep an eye on the news and what goes on in life, because the world is sort of falling apart right now, especially people out in America. But as you guys know, Free Palestine, boycott Coca-Cola, Starbucks, and Disney. Things are, you know, happening all around the world, not just with Palestine and Israel bombing Palestine, but Israel, I think, at one point bombed 5 countries within a single day, and nobody was able to do anything about it. Like, it's just so clearly like a terrorist state, and nobody can do anything about it because it has America in its back pockets. And America right now is falling apart as well. The whole thing with Charlie Kirk. I am pre-recording this, so by the time this airs, there's probably some new stuff that's going on, which is very, very unfortunate and horrible. But I just want you guys to stay safe out there. It's very, very important to – this is why it's very important for us to keep an eye on the news and what our government is doing and, you know, things like that, because we don't want to be put in a place where our lives are dictated for us, right? We want to remain – in as much control of our lives as possible. And the only way of doing that is to stay informed with what is going on within our community and what our governments are deciding to do and stuff like that. And the best way to do that is by having a say, right? Participate in community events, protests, you know, when it comes to like voting and stuff, vote if you can. And just, you know, catch up with the news and stuff like that. Most importantly, stay safe. Say I love you to your loved ones. Give them a hug. It's a scary world out there, but I know we're a very tenacious generation as well. We're very strong, and when we believe in something, nothing can stop us. Our only issue is that we're quite divided sometimes. If we all come to an agreement, we are so, so much more powerful than those people up at the top can ever be. So it's all about coming together as a collective and eat the rich, I suppose. No, I'm kidding. We all need to come together and have some consciousness on, like, oh, how does it say? Class consciousness. That's what it is, right? And we are stronger together. Sounds cliche, sounds kind of cringe, but that's the fact of the matter. It's true. And we can do so much together than we can individually. So even if it feels like you can't do anything right now, whether like you're too young or you feel like, you know, we're so disconnected from conflict and war that's going on around us, everyone plays a part in this current climate, right? Like, for example, the whole thing with Palestine and the starvation that is being how they're being deliberately starved and being bombed. The best thing we can do, I know it feels like we are so helpless, is to engage in those videos that Palestinians from the ground are trying to reach out to us. Engage, like, comment, share, repost, do anything you can, because there will be someone out there from your following list or things like that who will see it because you reposted it, and they will know about it, and then they will spread the word as well. The more people who know, the more people who are more outraged, and the more people we can do something about it because we're a collective, right? Things are changing. Things are scary. But that's all right, because we've got each other. Things will turn out okay if we believe it will, because we will do something about it. That is just that's who we are as a generation. We are the generation of doing things about it, as you can see about what's going on with social media. Social media is our biggest weapon, and the old farts are trying to use it against us, but they frankly don't know how to use it. We know how to use it though, so we gotta make the algorithm do our bidding, right? So go to the celebrities who haven't said anything about Palestine or something, but are outraged at Charlie Kirk for some reason. Not to say that I'm celebrating anyone's death, but it's just anyone who is silent about Palestinians being slaughtered and murdered, but are outraged at the death of Charlie. It says a lot about who you are. It's selective activism. Like, don't let them distract you with. There's a lot of distraction politics going on, like the whole thing with, you know, Taylor Swift getting married and stuff like that. Don't let them distract you from the main goal at hand, which is us coming together as a collective, us being angry at the people in power, and us wanting things to change. That is the main thing. But anyway, I love you guys. Thank you so much for sticking around. Please, please, please stay safe out there. Again, boycott Coke, Starbucks, and Disney. Free Palestine. I love you. Thank you all for joining me today on Thoughts and Theories. I hope you've learned something new or taken away something to think about. I hope to see you all next time. Till then, this has been Thoughts and Theories with Asha Amma Asri.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.